and welcome to Dragon's Trove, where all we talk about is Dungeons & Dragons. My name is Tristan, and tonight I will be joined by my brother Jace.
Hi.
This episode's a little bit different, as Troy couldn't join us, but Jace and I decided to sit down and have a DM-only kind of chat. We are going to talk about our favorite adventure themes to prepare, as well as to play in. Enjoy. Okay, episode 6.
Wow, it's been that many already. Themes.
It's been 6 already. It's crazy. I've had so much fun doing this. It is one of the most rewarding things that I have done when it comes to putting content out on the internet. I've tried my hand at streaming. I've tried my hand at doing some YouTube stuff in the past. But this one is definitely, this has definitely been my favorite one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I've done a lot of the similar avenues, and this is easy to do and hopefully entertaining to everybody. Haven't gotten a whole lot of feedback on it yet, which we would definitely appreciate, but yeah, it's just fun to do, if nothing else, because I like it.
Yeah, I just like to talk Dungeons & Dragons and anything to do with it, so there's that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like Jay said, go ahead and leave us some feedback. Leave us likes or dislikes. Let us know what you do like and dislike so that we can change or keep up those things. Well, since Troy's not here, I think that we can have a DM-only discussion here and kind of dig into a little bit more of how we like to do things. We talked about prep before.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of goes along with prepping in the sense that you're preparing an idea of what it is that you want to tell story-wise. I think that'll be good to talk about.
Okay. Well, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Okay, so when I'm preparing an adventure, when I'm preparing a campaign, it's something that I like to do in stages. And the reason for that is because I've tried it where you look at the overarching story, and it's like, you can get overwhelmed trying to keep everything in the same channel, to keeping everything flowing in the same direction, and making sure that motivations of different evil people, you know, match up with what the end result is going to be. And it can get very hectic, throwing in monsters. You know, does it make sense here? Do these monsters, would they play into the story at all? Stuff like that can be very, very overwhelming, especially for first-time DMs. And I read a piece of advice, I think it was just on the Dungeons & Dragons Reddit, when I first decided that I wanted to try my hand at DMing. And it gave me an idea that instead of looking at it, you know, as a whole picture, you jot down the notes of where you begin and where you want to end up. And then you just go and, like, kind of like how anime does, or I guess any TV show does, you know, you have story arcs that hit, and you look at it in those aspects. And so when you're finished with your first story arc, you look at your end result. Okay, if it's a dragon that is going to destroy the world, your first story arc maybe doesn't even have to do with the dragon at the end. Your first story arc might be that there is some sort of cultic activity going on in the area. Maybe there's been missing cattle or something. I'm just trying to be vague here. And it ends up that you find that there is some sort of evil mage or something, you know, that is controlling this area. And so you defeat the evil mage, and then you find clue number one that would link it to your big bad dragon guy at the end, you know. And I think that as you do that, you can begin to tie the story arcs together, so that all of a sudden you've created a little bit of a thread in between. And as you get closer to the end, you obviously will have a better idea of how it's going to go instead of trying to force everything through a choke point to get to your end result.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
If any of that even makes sense.
No, I understand what you mean. And there's a lot of it that that I employ in my DMing style. So you and I are a little bit different in where you like the pre-made adventures a little bit more than I do. And by a little bit more than I do, I mean you actually like use them to DM with, and I just kind of read them for recreation. So I've always had kind of an impromptu DM style, whereas it's a lot more reactive and on the fly than it is necessarily preparation with everything. I like to come up with settings, so to speak, like a rough map of the world and kind of what towns are like and everything. But I've kind of given up on designing stories. I've listened to several DMs talk. You know, I'm constantly just taking in as much DM and D&D information as I can because I always want to improve on my craft. You know, I kind of have the thought process that you either get better or you get worse. You never stay at the same place. And if you're not constantly taking in information, you're not changing. But instead of designing, like, stories for my players, I come up with conflicts. And a lot of those conflicts are decided on the fly based on my players' interactions. So I might have an idea. For instance, I'm just going to give an example because I think that's the easiest way to kind of conceptualize this. If I had my players, I wanted them to get captured by bandits, maybe. And it's like, okay, how can I have this happen? And make it happen in a way that it doesn't seem where I'm just like, oh, yeah, you guys get captured and you can't stop it. Nothing to do about it. You're over with. If you had players that, let's say they go into a town and, as I said earlier, you want them to be captured by bandits. They go around, they do some stuff. They end up stealing some gold or a hat from somebody, and they get up, they get thrown in jail. And then while they're in jail, they get transferred to this other area that happens to be owned by these bandits. And that's just a very vague example, not even like a good one, but it shows how it makes it look like the players chose to, their actions are what ended them up in here, whereas you kind of had that conflict planned all along. One of the most powerful things about being a DM is the illusion of choice. Whereas it makes it seem like your players' actions meant a whole lot, but in all reality, you kind of had this in mind to begin with, and they don't know any better. Like, there's a lot of DMs that struggle with, oh, you know, this just didn't turn out anything like I liked. Well, they don't know that, unless you share it with your players. They have no idea that you wanted them to get captured by bandits and it never happened. You know, a lot of times they're just having a good time playing on, going with everything. So I always encourage people to be a lot more reactive and designing in conflicts than storytelling points, because you're more often than not going to get to where you want to.
Yeah, that's very true as far as you can beat yourself up pretty quick, but you got to realize that they don't know what's behind the screen. They don't know what is in your head. You know that. And so something that I've tried to implement more is, like you said about me liking the pre-made adventures, I enjoy those because they help me to channel my creativity in a way that is not going to become sporadic and in a way that is not going to burn me out, because I'm going to be able to be reminded continuously as I read, you know, where the players are going to end up. And the reason that I like those so much is because before I let loose into my homebrew world with any players, I want to make sure that I can give them the best experience that I can. And so when I'm doing these pre-made adventures, it's almost like the chapters in the book are your story episodes, we'll say. And I've been able to be inspired by that in crafting any sort of homebrew story or campaign that I'm going to do in the future, in the way that I write it and the way that I lay it out for myself in a way that is going to allow me to be as creative as I am with these pre-made adventures. The reason I like the pre-made adventures so much is because I literally never run anything in that adventure the way it's supposed to be ran, but it all is still going to make sense in the end for my players.
Yeah, so you do a good job of injecting your own personality into it and kind of making it different, as you said, different than what it originally was, and living and reactive, which is, you know, a wonderful trait to have as a DM.
Yeah, and it's been very rewarding from when I first started to now. I don't like to not be prepared. I don't like to have things not ready, so to speak. I like to have big encounters already planned. I think that's everybody. You know, you generally have a large encounter planned at some point. But I like to make sure that I've taken notes and I know the characters, the NPCs. That's what I'm referring to when I say characters from now on for this little bit here. I like to know the characters ahead of time because I want to be as comfortable as I can when the dialogue is free-flowing. I don't want to be trying to pull something out of my head, risking, you know, either contradicting myself later or making an experience that is not as immersive as it could be. So that being said, the pre-made adventures make it really nice because all that prep work is done. I just have to read it for the most part. And I might not even use the same names. I may not use anything, but at least it's there to fall back on. So as I'm doing my own homebrew, getting it ready, getting it tweaked, and I understand that not everything is going to go exactly as you have planned, but make enough of a notation on things so that when you're on the fly, it's going to be easier to accommodate the player's actions or maybe even their words. You know, something as basic as a conversation can mean a whole lot to players if it's done correctly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. And that's one of those things that you do well by kind of reading beforehand and getting a real good idea of your characters. And I think that's a great way to do it. I like to be reactive, and I generally write notes down while I'm talking about things. And the reason being is because if you create a world that's reactive, in my opinion, you can flow with it and make events seem more real. Just because of how I like to do it, I suppose. And the biggest thing I use to keep track of that, like I said, is just writing down notes, everything. You know, I'll go even so little as, like, this guy talks with a Russian accent. You know, his name's blah, blah, blah. This is the kind of junk that he said. And as long as you keep that there handy for yourself, you can always reference it and kind of keep on your kind of story that you're pushing forward and not, what's the word I'm looking for? When you make a mistake and you have to redact yourself.
Like a retcon?
Yeah, yeah. Like, so you don't have to retcon yourself because you've kind of painted yourself into a corner.
Yeah. That's something that is very important, to be able to leave yourself room, which is why I like to, that's why I like to go ahead and know my characters that I'm going to be playing for the evening, so that I can give myself that freedom. Now, my problem is that I can't multitask very well. So I need to have these notes that are very concise and I know exactly what they mean, so I can just make a quick glance, and then I'm all about making eye contact with the players. And I feel like if I'm not doing that enough, that I'm not making a good connection.
Fun fact, the drummer just said that he can't multitask very well.
Yeah, that's true. I do drum, and I cannot multitask. And maybe that's why. Maybe it's because I do drum that my brain can no longer do other multi-functions at the same time. But it's something that took a lot of time, and the only way that I was ever going to reach a certain level, which I'm definitely not even close to being there yet, but I'm constantly trying to improve on what I do, is I used to make these very large, elaborate notes about characters, or about like the building that they were in, or you know, just things like that. It's like you can't have everything figured out, I have found out.
Unfortunately.
And so when I'm right, and when I'm making these notes, I just try to give the most amount of information in as few of words as possible that make sense to me on the fly. And this is going to be different for everybody. That is so subjective. It's not even funny. You can't even take this as advice.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't.
If neither one of these styles work for you, you're like, oh, well, my style works for me. Great. Don't change it. Don't touch anything.
Right.
You know, keep doing that. But if you're looking for...
We're nerds who sit at home. We're not column writers here or anything like that who have some
absolutely
formula.
Absolutely not. No. But what we are saying is, if your current style is not working in the way that you want it to, try one of these methods. See if that works out for you better. And if it doesn't, try something else.
That's true, because you can always continuously try new things. You're, like we said, the players are never going to know. They're just not going to know. I mean, they might feel a difference in tone, but as far as mechanically how your mind operates, they're not necessarily going to know that. So you try something until it works. I've got an amalgam of different styles that I try to pull from at any one time, and now it's not even a conscious effort anymore. It's just become a part of who I am, and I feel like it works. I feel like it works for the people that I play with. You know, Jace does have a completely different style than I do, and we can both play in each other's games though, and it'd be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we grew up together. But
that's true,
and we're
that's very true.
We're used to compromising.
that's true.
I think the only common denominator between our two styles is we both describe being comfortable in our mediums, whatever that medium is. You don't necessarily have to be a person that does these grand descriptors where you're talking about, like, you know, how the sun sets over the valley. And a certain chill goes through the air. You breathe in this crisp autumn air into your lungs, and it's almost refreshing as the night starts to fall upon you. You know, you don't have to do these descriptors with words like that. You can be a visual medium guy. You can be that guy that draws maps. You can be that guy that how he shows what's going on is he's constantly referencing time. You know, like, oh, you know, that's right now it's October 1st, you know, and it's about 70 degrees outside and the temperature gets lower at night, you know, so that the players kind of have this vision in their head. Okay. So it's fall time. People are probably, you know, like picking pumpkins. There might be some festivals going on in the area. Leaves are starting to fall, you know, where they can take it and they move on. You know, it's whatever. As long as your players are having fun and you're having a good time, you're doing it right.
Yeah. And so then that brings me to the themes of the adventures. I try to have a general theme in mind, a general idea of, you know, what's going to happen in the adventure. Tonality would be a good word to use here. Is it going to be dark? Is it going to be gritty? You know, is it going to be dark and gritty? Things like that will help to channel your mind. And I think that it's important that you go ahead and set a tone right before you start planning anything, just so that you can kind of tap into that niche of whatever it
what
is
am
that
I trying
you're
to convey?
Do. Right. You know, if it is going to be, if it's going to be a campaign that is, or even an adventure, you know, maybe it's just a dungeon crawl for a night or something, whatever it is, if it's going to be, you know, this light, fun, frolic through the flowers kind of thing, go for it. You know, like that way you can implement creatures. There are creatures of all types that will fit into any story niche that you can think of. And that way you're not all over the map, you know, scatterbrained trying to get something together. You can really hit the nail on the head and pull from monsters and deities, maybe interacting with the environment or different magical energies. You know, is it evocation magic? Is it transmutation magic? Stuff like that. Like for your bad guys, necromancy, all of these little elements you can tie together so well, and that gives a very important immersion to your story, because you just based on the tone that you set will help you to pick out background music if you're that kind of person, or if you are a drawer, you know, it'll help you to maybe the drawing style that you use would be maybe a little bit gritty looking, things like that. I don't know, just tone is so important to me, and these are the details I get caught up in.
Absolutely. Yeah, you tone know? Is, and it's one of those things that tone can shift as you're going along. You know, like some of the best stories that you've ever played, or some of the best animes that you've ever watched. Tristan, I don't know. I don't think you're a Brotherhood fan, but in Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, you have some moments that are super serious and gritty, and then just, you know, a little bit later, you know, it's kind of a comical tone that happens to, you know, break some of the tension loose. And those are things that you can do in your story, as long as they flow in a way that makes sense. You know, that they're like where they are there for a purpose, you know, and it can be your story starts out dark and gritty and then it turns happy, you know, just like people in Steps of Life where, you know, sometimes they're on top of the world and other times they're on the bottom.
Yeah. And that's important to make sure that your tone can be flexible throughout different legs of the adventure, just because it will feel more realistic that way. I know we always kind of say that, you know, about realism and things in the game, and we're trying to escape a little bit, you know, we're trying to play a fantasy game. But I think it helps to just kind of concrete ideas in the player's mind of the world if you can incorporate ties to everyday life.
Yeah.
And tone
yeah,
shift is a big thing.
It's a fantasy game, but it's a fantasy game where you're trying to be somebody else in a world.
Yes, exactly. I don't know. It's really cool when you have all those elements tied together. It really feels like a complete package.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you have everything in mind and you're flowing really well. Yeah. So Tristan talked about background music, and that's something that he and I both agree on that we're huge with, like a background music that really pushes your tone of what you're doing, you know, something that might be upbeat and happyful for like a festival, or something dark and gritty for a trudge through a forest. I even like to do multiple things. Like I like to play a song, and then like if I did one campaign where everybody was in a cave at the moment, so I like played this kind of like weird spooky music, and then I had another sound effect over the top of it of dripping to kind of simulate dripping caves. And weird scurryings of bats and everything, and just all these sound loops over the top of each other. And I'm also big into smells, too. I think one of the best things you can do as a DM is to titillate everybody's senses, you know, with visuals and with your hearing. And then, you know, if you have a prop, you can actually touch it. But also with smells. So, you know, I had this candle that was a little bit more kind of musty, kind of like a rain, kind of damp smell, to kind of give you that idea. You know, if you close your eyes, maybe you might think you were in that cave. And Tristan's, he's the one that kind of turned me on to some of these smells by finding that candle place.
Epic Candle Adventures, I think. Hold on. I'm going to get this shout out right. Epic Adventure Candle Company. They're great. Look them up on Etsy. I'm smelling Healer's Hearth right now, and it smells so good. Yes. Yeah.
Just like little things like that, or, you know, if you're in a monastery temple, I have incense in my house that I burn for things along those lines to just kind of make you feel like you're really there.
Which, that's one of my favorite parts about playing with somebody who cares so much about the details, because even if it's not necessarily 100% the most fitting smell, it still helps me to immerse myself because there is something going on. You know, the background music that you play is never going to 100% fit the situation, but you can get it to the point where it is so real. You know, as you listen, as you just kind of listen into those dripping cave sounds or whatever, you know, the music playing, like I'm saying, it may not be fitting. It might be a little bit slower paced than maybe, you know, whatever the situation's going on. You know, maybe there's tension and things, but it's not necessarily about having the most perfect everything. It's just having something to give a reference to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things that can change as you go along, too. You know, like, it's, you don't always, you can do stuff where all of a sudden you just cut something out to kind of simulate a sudden shift in what's going on. If you're trying to switch from one tone to another, or trying to paint one theme more than you were otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I really liked the candles. That was something that I had never thought about before. I don't even remember where I found the idea. I might have just stumbled upon the Etsy store in general and just thought, oh, that'd be,
yeah,
cool.
I think you found it on accident, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but I think that is so neat, because that's something that a lot of tables I don't think do, is the smells. And I don't know, it's just there's something about it, you know, when you have it there, sitting at the table. And a lot of these candles, actually all of them, unless you get like the little sample candles, are woodwick candles. So you can hear the crackling of a fire. And I don't know, I don't want to talk about candles, but Epic Adventure Candle Company.
This is our Yankee candle review. no, but just like, you know, like a teacher in life would, tries to do some examples from, you know, reading out of the book, and then also going up to the board and writing, and then having other people do it. It's because other people learn and experience things differently. So if at your table your players aren't engaging the way that you want them to, maybe you're just not, quote unquote, teaching them the right way. Maybe you're not stimulating the correct sense with the type of learner that they are, or the type of person that they have, where they react to that stimuli. And by kind of touching on all of them at once, or focusing on the ones that make the most difference to your players, you can really heighten their experience without them even really knowing it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like you're going to something's just going to click maybe for you just by listening to us talk. These are things that have been found out over, at least for me, the last 3 years of playing. And there will always be something new that I'm going to find out that I had never thought about before and implement it into my gaming. It's just wanting to get better that makes a difference. And people see that. If you care, people see.
Yeah, you put the time into it. And as long as you're passionate about it and you have a group that's passionate about D&D, they're probably going to get into it. You know, it's about, not to get into the psychology of things too much, but mirroring is a big thing. You know, the act of doing something and then somebody else is going to repeat you doing it, when you're in sync with them. That's a big thing. So as much energy as you put into it is as much energy as you are going to get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that is, That's one of my favorite parts about the hobby in general is that once you find that group of guys who really do care, you all encourage each other to continue to care about the
And
game,
actual
about the hobby.
encouragement, you know, not just fake, like,
Right.
oh yeah, that was cool, man. Good on you, mate.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It as you get more comfortable and you ask for feedback and I don't know, for me I love feedback even if it's negative just because it makes me feel like somebody cares about what it was that I was doing. Somebody cared that I spent time to prepare this and now they're saying, "Well, okay, maybe that didn't click with me so well, you know, and here's what I would have done." I like playing with in a group where other people are dungeon masters as well because it's continuously like a brainstorm session almost. You continuously find new things, you continuously get new ideas and I that encourages me, that helps me to take my craft and make it better and better and better all the time.
Yeah, that's a big thing that I would advise that if you can get a DM or a couple DMs to sit at your table with you and play, do it. Because 9 times out of 10 you're gonna get that DM that says, "Well, this is how I would have done this situation." And you could either learn from it or not really do anything with it, and that's fine too.
Yeah, if it doesn't fit your style, you know, don't try to cram something in that is going to be way out of place, you know. At that point, it's just understanding your players.
Yeah, and don't be upset by questions about things like, okay, so how did this work? Because if somebody's asking you a question about your world, they're obviously interested in it.
Yeah, which is freaking great.
Yeah, that's what you wanted to have happen to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. It's freaking great. Last little bit here. I want to just kind of talk about some of my favorite adventures in general. Something that I look forward to playing. Some guys like dragons. Some guys like
Me.
that city noir intrigue kind of thing. Some people are really drawn to combat heavy sessions, combat heavy campaigns, you know. But before I go, Jace, why don't you give me if you could have like your dream campaign, what would it be about?
You totally faked me out there, man. I thought you were gonna go, and you're like, "Hey, check this. Think fast."
Juke.
So my idea of a perfect campaign. Oh shoot.
So yeah, something that like you would be 100% on board to play in.
Well,
It's
one of the
tough.
reasons why I DM is because I enjoy seeing other people have fun, and I like how seeing them interact at the table. So for me to want to play in something all the time, is a big thing for me. That's a big hurdle that I have to overcome. Well, first off, I'm an elf in this campaign. That's a given. So I get to
Okay.
be an elf. And then other people are just as interactive as I am in whatever it is I'm doing. I don't really like meme campaigns. I tend to lean more towards the serious campaign where you're your character the entire time, and if you open up your mouth and say something, you're saying that in character. And where people actually work together. I get I where you don't hear the "Well, my guy, Hank, the half orc warrior, walks over with his battle axe and cuts him." You know, like you get things like, "Hank, destroy you!" And then I swing my battle axe at him and try to cleave him in twine. You know, like that's super
Yeah.
nerdy and stuff like that. But you know, like that's engaging. It's like, oh, cool, yeah, we getting hype now. And not like forced, you know, like not like forced where you're like, okay, what does Hank do with his axe? that he can cut people in twine with, you know, just like actual natural, this is how it would work kind of a thing.
Right.
Almost like a theater or thespians or something that I didn't participate in high school.
Okay. Okay, I gotcha.
I think theme and the environment and the setting are kind of negligible for me, at least.
Okay, so there's not a particular, you know, thing that you're all about. It's just in general, as long as you've got a good group of role players, you're good.
As a player, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I love investigations. I like mysteries. Okay. So anything that has to do with that, I love, because I like deducing things. I like trying to figure out clues. I like trying to find motives and things. And so I've never played in like an all city dwelling campaign, but I think I would really enjoy that, just because there'd be all these people you could talk to, and you know, there would be like this political side. And maybe that's the reason I would like to do it so much, is because I've never done it. I mean, everybody likes crap with dragons, but I just feel like the right, the urban campaign setting, I just feel like that'd be really, really neat to play in. Which brings me to my last point of Waterdeep Dragon Heist was released a couple weeks ago.
Has nothing to do with dragons.
Has absolutely nothing to do with dragons. Dragons are actually a currency within Waterdeep for all you Forgotten Realms nerds like me.
What a freaking cuck, dude.
Yeah, right? You thought it was going to be big, and then it was just 500,000 dragons. And they're gold pieces.
Get bodied.
But that's a lot of freaking money.
Yeah, which I don't mean to sidetrack. What kind of a campaign do you run after you've ran your low-level NPCs through that, or your PCs through that? And here you are, they got like 5 million gold, and it's like, okay. Your level's 4 or 6 now, whatever the adventure is, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's 1 to 5. Levels 1 to 5.
In the middle.
Yeah, right there. And at the end, it is written into the book all kinds of things that your players can do, which gave me a whole lot of ideas. Even running your own tavern, how long you could do it. I think you can run it for like 37 years if you didn't acquire any more money. If you just spent the 500,000 dragons that you have, I think you can run it for like 37 or 38 years or something. It's this weird formula.
That sounds like the type of tavern that Hank, the half-orc barbarian that tries to cleave people in twine, would try to run.
Probably. but then, after it's all said and done, after you do this like little downtime, and they're coming out in a few weeks from here, we're like right in the middle of the Waterdeep Dragon Heist getting released until... now we've got a couple weeks left for Waterdeep, the Mad Mage, I think it's called.
Yes.
Is that what it is? It's level 5 to 20, and you go to Undermountain. It's great.
Yeah, Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
Dungeon of the Mad Mage, that's it right there. Waterdeep, Dungeon of the Mad Mage. Has to do with Halaster Blackcloak and Undermountain. So if you guys don't know any lore on Undermountain, go look that up. It's actually really, really cool. You also get to travel to Skullport, which is the underdwelling of Waterdeep, and there's interactions with the Xanathar and all kinds of
his guys.
All kinds of cool, yeah, all kinds of cool guys. So, anyway, yeah, I think that about sums it up for tonight. I would love to do an urban campaign setting. Jace would love to play with the best role players in the world.
I think I could hang.
I think I could hang out with Critical Role members.
Some of them.
Liam O'Brien, I'm talking to you, man. and Taliesin. Definitely, yeah. Hang out with those guys.
If I could just hang out like with like Chris Percy, Chris Perkins and Matthew Mercer, I probably wouldn't talk. I would just sit there and listen to them.
And just follow them around with a notebook.
Yeah, and like an Arby's roast beef sandwiches.
Nice. What if they don't like those?
Oh, they're for me.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha. Okay, that's gonna be a wrap. We are totally just deteriorating.
What did we try to talk about again?
Adventure themes. I think we did good.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, we totally went on a tangent, but I think we did good.
Yes.
I mean, we made 40 minutes worth of talking.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, we did. I mean, so we talked about something.
Yeah, definitely. Good luck taking stuff out of this, folks.
Yeah, right. I hope you guys have fun listening to this, as much fun as we have recording it. As always, I have no idea what it is the next episode is going to be about, and neither will you until you tune in. This podcast is released 12 Central Standard Time. That would be noon. Do the math wherever you're at in the world. I'm not going to do it for you because I'm not very good at math. That's why I have dice rollers. Anyway, you guys enjoy, and we will see you next week. Jace, go ahead and send them off with
famous
goodbyes.
Bye.
And he jumped the gun on that.
Bye.
All right. See you guys later.